Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Stop It's Time, Wednesday, November 6th, I think.
Yes, 6th? I believe so.
Glad you're with us for a full hour. It will mainly be taking your questions today. There's a lot of different directions that we could go. We'll recap what happened a week ago tonight in the Eastern Conference Final. I guess we'll kind of preview the MLS Cup Final, which that'll be a thriller. But we're moving into a transition period now for every club in MLS, and certainly I know you have a lot of questions about that, so go ahead and start typing them in right now on the bottom of your screen. I want to remind you that Stoppage Time is brought to you by Aaron's Easy Beautiful, affordable top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best, that's fine. Shop Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. You know, every day, I feel like I'm going through the five stages of grief, and every day it gets a little better. I was really, really bummed out, obviously, Wednesday night. I mean, you heard it on the post-game show. And it's so weird to reconcile what has happened because, on one hand, Atlanta United had an awesome season. They had a great season. They won two trophies. They finished top three for the Shield. They went to the Eastern Conference Final. They hosted it. By any measure, that's a really good year. I think I'm just still stuck on the fact that, man, we could have had an MLS Cup Final at home. And you probably would have been the Vegas favorite. I don't know if it would have been a guarantee that you would have beaten Seattle. But
you would have been the favorite.
You would have been the favorite. And it's not going to happen because you had 2.5 expected goals, and Toronto had 0.1 expected goals. But that's soccer, unfortunately, and that happens. There have probably been some occasions where Atlanta United has won a match like that over their 3-year history.
I don't think to that degree, but yes.
The one that comes to my mind is the match at Yankee Stadium last year in the regular season, which ended as a draw, not a win, but it was a draw that felt like a win. The 1-1 draw where Guzan made some big saves. The woodwork helped you a couple times. I think it was a real gaudy XG differential on that.
It wasn't that big. I'll tell you the one that I think had the biggest XG differential that Atlanta won was at Minnesota last year. Because you get an own goal.
Right, yeah, the own goal and then a red card.
Yep. And then you're under siege.
Yeah. Well, that was the greatest win in club history.
It's on the list. It is on the list.
But, again, that's soccer. And, I don't want to demean Toronto at all. I think we, as Atlanta United fans, need to be a little bit careful about that. I don't think it's productive to demean Toronto. I mean, to go to the MLS Cup Final 3 times in 4 years does not happen accidentally.
Yeah.
So credit to them. But that's why this hurts as much as it does, and it still hurts a week later, because you were better than them in the conference final. You had everything in front of you. It feels to me, on a much larger scale, like Open Cup last year, that awful match against Chicago, awful because of the way Chicago played.
Also where you controlled it.
You had match control, and then you had a USL team standing between you and the Open Cup semifinal. And you would have hosted, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago playing very cynical soccer with Bastian Schweinsteiger kicking people all over the place. They come out with a 1-0 win. And then, well, what if Tata had played first choice? Or what if this happened? Or what if that happened? And it just sucks to have the what-ifs. Mm-hmm. I hate having the what-ifs.
There's not a lot of what-ifs in this one, though. And that's why I have a little bit different feeling about it.
But I have one big one. What if Joseph makes the penalty?
Well, those kind of what-ifs. Right, yeah. The in-game what-ifs. Right. But big picture, I remember back in, I want to say June or July, talking about it here, what's success? What is a successful year?
Yeah.
And I think, we'd have to go back and check the tapes, I think I said Open Cup and an Eastern Conference Final.
Yes.
I can't complain.
And you're right.
Even the way it happened, I think I have to keep reminding myself.
Changed though last Tuesday night when LAFC lost, because then it just opened the door to something that
lost and then us being almost 2-0 up.
Yeah, like from midnight Tuesday going into Wednesday, from midnight Tuesday to about 8:15 on Wednesday evening, you're thinking, oh my God, like this
could be a walk
this,
in the park.
This could actually really happen. Yeah. And then you have a travel and all that. And that's, again, that's why I'm so emotionally torn about all this, because it was a great season. It was, I mean, 22 other clubs in MLS, including the loser on Sunday, would kill to have the season that Atlanta United had. Absolutely would kill to have that season. Yep. But I'm just torn.
That's how I was Wednesday night, Thursday, into Friday. It was... It's all right there for you. But getting distance from it, as a whole, 2019 was a good year. In 2019, absolutely, you added the Open Cup, which is a major trophy. You added the Campeones Cup and maybe turned that into a bigger trophy than it was before the match started. And you won 28 matches in the calendar year and had a lot of twists and turns, a lot of things to deal with. But I think it's a successful year. And that's the thing about the sport that's so unique. I think American sports fans are still kind of wrapping their heads around a little bit in that you can fall short of the championship. And in Major League Soccer, MLS Cup is the champion. The Supporters Shield is great. Don't get me wrong. It is a major trophy. MLS Cup is the trophy. So LAFC came up short for the big trophy, but won the Supporters Shield, had a great year. Atlanta United won the Open Cup, added the Campeones Cup, had a great year, didn't have the greatest year, because Seattle or Toronto is going to have that. Either way, if Toronto comes in as the 4 seed, figures out a way to win at home against DC, which, how different would that have been if DC had been able to beat FC Cincinnati with 9 men on decision day?
Yeah, and then you're going to Audi Field as opposed to playing in Toronto.
That could have been a completely different road in the Eastern Conference. But they knock off NYC in a defensive game at Citi Field, about to say Yankee Stadium, it wasn't. They win a defensive game here, and if they win on Sunday, it's going to be a defensive game. They're going to have to play that way. They can't. Jozy Altidore's not going to be available, it sounds like. They're going to have to defend.
Right.
That's an amazing run. You have to celebrate that if you're Toronto. If you're Seattle, you were number 4 in the league. You went to LAFC and knocked them off fairly comprehensively. And you got your moment of winning MLS Cup in your building in front of a raucous crowd. It's an amazing year for Seattle if they win it.
Yeah. Separating Atlanta United from this discussion for 1 second, you have Toronto and Seattle. You have Schmetzer and Vanney. Mm-hmm. Have we seen a referendum on style of play that... Mm-hmm. The Schmetzer, Vanney defensive, almost borderline negative style of play is what's going to win cups, as opposed to something a little more free, like what we saw last year from Atlanta United or this year from LAFC?
Last year we were defensive in the postseason.
In the postseason, yeah
and that's what did it.
Yeah.
LAFC never got defensive and probably should have gotten a little more defensive. So we go backwards. This year, if Seattle wins, they're not going to be defensive on Sunday. I don't think Seattle's defensive. I think even at LAFC, they were not that defensive. Against a team like that, you have to defend and counter. But they had ways out. It wasn't the Seattle that came here last season. And, I mean, Brian Schmetzer, he pushed back on it then. But the week before, he apologized to Brad Friedel and said, look, this is the only way we can play right now. They didn't have Raul Ruiz Diaz. Now they're different. They're not expansive, but they have a way to play. I think he gets the most out of the group he has. Vanney is not necessarily defensive either, but he can be. If he has to be, he's pragmatic. He's going to do what he's got to do to win. That's what wins cups. I think that's the difference. It's not defensive, but Bob Bradley, for example, not pragmatic enough. You're missing Mark Anthony Kay to start. You throw Lee Wynn in. You've got Walker Zimmerman, who's coming back from an injury. Is he 100%? We don't know. Why are you risking so much in a Western Conference final when you can be a little more pragmatic, change it up a little bit more, be a little more creative? Instead, you're sticking to what's worked all season but might not work with what you have at that moment. That's the difference. I think Vanney isn't married to one way to play. Schmetzer isn't married to one way to play. Tata Martino showed it last year. Mm-hmm. He wasn't married to just being an attacking manager. He can get pragmatic. You have to be pragmatic to win MLS Cup. The playoffs are a whole different animal.
And Atlanta United, up until Wednesday night in the, 13th minute, had proven that that's the way to go to advance, because they were, until that point, the only team of the entire playoff that had not conceded a goal.
And not in a mega defensive way either.
Not really.
No. I mean, it was a little more conservative. They limited risk, but not bunkering by any stretch. They were nowhere near as defensive as Atlanta United was in 2018.
Yeah, I agree. Which is ironic in a way.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the perception of that team got altered dramatically after that playoff run ended, where people just kind of forgot the way that they played at Yankee Stadium, the way they played at Red Bull, the way they played against Portland, quite frankly. Mm-hmm.
The way they played in the home legs that they got goals from,
right.
But they
right.
were still defense first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the New York City home leg was unusual because you already had the road goal and the 1-0 lead.
They had to open up.
Exactly.
And Red Bulls came in with just a dumb strategy.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, so here we are at the end of the 2019 season. I think in the weeks to come, when we kind of get past what's going to happen next week, and by this time next week, the trade window will be just about to close.
Yeah, it'll be a few more hours.
We'll be getting closer to getting a list of unprotected players for expansion draft. In 2 weeks, I think we'll be pretty much at the point of expansion draft. I think beyond that, as we go into the holidays, we'll have more time to reflect on things like favorite moments, favorite games, things like that. There's going to be a lot of time for that.
You know, that's what's weird, though, is for me, it really feels like for the teams outside of MLS Cup, this week is the end of the 2019 season.
Yeah.
And MLS Cup shuts the door on it, shuts the window on it very hard, because Monday at 1 o'clock, the trade window opens. Mm-hmm. And guys start moving. And there's going to be moves in the league. I mean, Nashville's already making moves.
Right.
Atlanta did the same thing ahead of 2017. Remember, they had already made the deal for Sean Johnson, and it was already done and locked up. It just couldn't be announced yet. So they traded for Sean Johnson, and then Brad Guzan became available. And then you traded for Sean Johnson, and then you flipped him to NYC and made money on the deal.
Right.
But that's where you're at right now, is you've got Nashville building a roster. In a very different way than Miami.
Yeah, Dave Romney and Dax McCarty, trades pending for them to go to Nashville. McCarty seems like someone who might wear the armband for them. I'm not positive.
That's a really good pickup. I like that one for Nashville.
Exactly. Miami hasn't done anything within MLS yet. And honestly, we aren't really hearing any trade rumblings about Miami
now.
It's been basically purchases from outside.
There's an interesting rumor in Miami, though, about Javier Mascherano. Mm-hmm. And you talk about a potential captain. Mascherano's deal in China ends, I believe, this month or next month. And there were reports out of Argentina that Estudiantes had reached out. They were interested in bringing him, but his family really likes the idea of Miami and MLS. So he's up there. You know, is he going to be a holding midfielder for you, or is he going to be a center back? You know, you think back to his time at Barcelona, he became an undersized center back that was incredibly effective playing next to Pique. Can he do that here? It's a different challenge, and at his age, it's a big question, but you talk about a leader, you're not going to find many better ones than Mascherano.
Right. Are questions coming in? Okay, good. I think we just kind of open this up to questions today. I mean, we can really go in any different direction. Just to preface again, trade window opens Monday. Mm-hmm. Atlanta United will probably be active one way or the other. You know, we can go as far as we reasonably can on speculating about contracts, and it really, truly is speculation. We aren't handed a sheet from the team, okay, these are the expired contracts. We just don't know. But we can have discussions in kind of a broad general level if you want to ask about that. If you want to ask us about the MLS Cup Final, what we think about that coming up on Sunday, go right ahead. If you have questions about the Toronto match, we'll really go in any direction that you would like to go. But we'll get started now. Questions are brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com.
Let's see. Chris Kilroy starts us off with, "Hey guys, seems a lot of speculation aligns on Nagby leaving. If true, how can we replace him?" He asked, European based players, question mark?
You could. I think Emerson Hyndman can be a replacement for him as well. And think Hyndman's skill set lends himself to that kind of role. We saw him in more of an attacking role in front of a Nagby, but I think he can play in that little bit deeper role. The bigger question is going to be, what's the default way to play for this team next year? Because we never really got one in 2019, a lot of it due to the injuries.
Right.
You went from a 4-3-3 when we talked to Frank day one of training camp. That's what he kind of felt like, that's where he wanted to go. He wasn't saying this is how it has to be, because then Franco Escobar gets hurt and he didn't trust anyone else at right back. You go 3-4-3, didn't really work in that format. You went 4-3-3, it did work. Then you had injuries and you had to get away from that because you didn't have outside backs. You go to 3-5-2 and it works really well, but then you go back to 4-3-3 at the very end in the postseason. I don't know which one would have been the default. I don't think there was one. I think you want one going into 2019 or into 2020. That's going to determine how you replace Darlington Nagby, because if you are playing a 4-3-3 in the traditional Dutch slash Barcelona way, I think you want a number six who is going to be strong on the ball and get a lot of touches. A la, don't freak out, a Michael Bradley, a Will Trapp, a possession-dominant number six. Nagby maybe could end up being that, and I think we saw him do some of that this season that he hadn't really done in his career. I don't know if that's Hyndman's game. So if you were thinking he would go here next year, and if he doesn't come back, according to Doug Robertson at the AJC, he has a year on his contract. He has one more year on his contract. That was in today's paper. If you move on from that, but you were thinking that's where you want to go next year, okay, that's a different type of change than if you're going to get a number eight box-to-box possession dominant. Those are two different positions. I think Hyndman can replace what we saw from Nagby this year. But if you were projecting him to become a deeper-lying central midfielder, it's a different get. I don't know if that's Hyndman.
Joey Logan on Facebook says, how many players are gone from the club realistically?
Well,
he said 3?, 4?, 5-7, shoot, or 8 plus.
I've seen some people say 20. Like it,
no.
No, but that's out there. Like, yeah. This guy. Look, again, without knowing exactly what contracts are, I think that's a little bit hard to assign a number to. I think it might be easier to go down the list and pick out who's definitely back.
Yeah.
And that might seem like a shorter list than we're all comfortable with. It doesn't mean that that is the list. Yeah. But like, we know Joseph is back. We know Miles Robinson is back. They're under long-term contracts.
Let's go position. Let's kind of go up the field.
Sure.
So we don't know Brad Gazan's contract situation, but there's been nothing about him being out of contract. He's back, I would reasonably assume. Backline, Bello's back.
For sure.
Yeah, there's either an option or he's under contract for another year. He's back. Escobar's under contract, according to all reports.
Yes.
Miles Robinson has been re-signed. LGP, option year. So you have a decision there. Midfield, Jeff Lorenowitz, out of contract. He said he wants to come back. You've got to re-sign him. He qualifies for MLS free agency, which is a different situation. Remedi's under contract. Hyndman, you have an option to purchase his deal. Assuming what you spent to bring him here in the first place on loan, which was substantial.
An international spot, I think. Right?
And a good chunk of allocation money.
Right.
I think the idea was always to make that permanent.
Right.
Vialba's on an option, according to Doug at the AJC. Barco's under contract. Pitti's under contract, although we don't know how long. Joseph under contract. Those are all new deals. Escobar's under contract through 20, I think. 20 or 21. Him and Remedi, one's 20, one's 21. I don't remember it off the top of my head. Nagby's under option. Gressel's under option. I don't think anybody walks with an option not picked up out of what we've talked about so far. Even if you can't sign them to a long-term deal, you're going to pick up the option so you have the opportunity
to get
move
something
them.
For them.
Yes, and that's a huge key here. And that's something that nobody's talking about, in my opinion. You are going to see changes. I think you're going to see more changes than we've seen in the past. I think that's fair to say. It's after year three. I mean, just the law of averages, contracts. This is how it works. You can't keep guys under long-term deals forever. So you're going to see change, but you're not in a position to have anybody that is massively important walk on a free. And that's one of these other big things about the soccer world. DC has completely screwed up, in my opinion, in letting Wayne Rooney leave on a free, letting Luciano Acosta leave on a free. They let Bill Hamid leave on a free previously. They had to pay money to get him back on loan. And now you don't know what his situation is. They've gotten nothing back to rebuild. Atlanta United's in a position that even if you don't get these guys long term, you're going to be able to get something in return to rebuild with. You're going to replace guys if they do go. And you're going to have plenty to work with to do it. So, starters, and we've said starters would include up to 15 players.
Yeah.
I think you could see three maybe new ones next year.
Which is about what the transition was from 2018 to 2019.
Yeah, I think the depth will be a little more different.
Yeah. But again, in terms of starting selection, mm-hmm. you probably flip three or four from 2017 to 2018. I mean, let's think.
Carmona, you lost.
Carmona, Walks.
Yeah. Walks had turned into a starter by the end, yeah.
Who else?
I think that's it.
Yeah, because Carmona became Nagby.
Yeah.
Walks, you don't count really Jacob Peterson.
No.
Okay, so maybe two.
Two.
And then from 2018 to 2019, you lost Almiron, you lost Garza, you lost McCann, who was kind of a 50-50 starter.
Rotation.
Rotation.
You lost two starters that you would think.
Right, yeah. Am I leaving anyone out? Mm-mm. Not leaving, okay. So,
when healthy, you lost two. I think you'll have more than that this time. But like one or two more.
Yeah. And again, I think if you consider the core of your team to be Pitti, Joseph, Barco.
All under contract.
You're good. And
Gressel's up in the air.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are scared about that. And that's the thing. Like, it's tough. It's tough in a salary cap league to be able to keep everyone you want to keep and make them all happy. It is very, very difficult.
You can't. You can't.
No.
Because guys outperform deals, and they need to get raises, and you don't have unlimited money to pay raises.
Right. Now, Darren Eel said on Dukes and Bell, I think, last week, that Julian Gressel is in the club's plans going forward. There obviously is a negotiation taking place based on comments from both sides.
He's speaking to the media tomorrow at their end-of-the-season media day.
Yeah. So, you know, that's just one of those things where let's wait and see and not jump to conclusions, obviously.
Especially with him, he put up those comments, you know, leading up to the game, to the match about him being frustrated about
Well, he responded to a question. I don't think he put comments out. I think there's a big difference in that.
I'll agree with that.
I think we had dinner in Montreal with someone who suggested that like 16, 17 guys were going to leave this team, and they're only going to have three or four left. I don't see that at all. I do think that Frank will continue to try to put his imprint on this team.
Yep.
And he said after the match on Wednesday that he and Carlos have already kind of had those preliminary discussions going forward, identifying the types of players that he'd like to bring in. So it's going to look a little bit more like a Frank DeBoer team next year than it did this year. The key is stay healthy through training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that with the earlier start to the regular season that you don't have this ridiculous match compression where you're playing 18 matches in 40 days like you were at points this year.
I think you'll do preseason a little differently, too. I think with jumping into CONCACAF, and if the regular season starts earlier, too, like, just bump everything up. Let's go beginning of January, whatever. But I think you're going to play more matches in preseason to prepare for that. I think that was something that the way things worked out this past time, you had a lot of closed-door stuff. You had a lot of friendlies. You didn't have the not even the public games against lower division stuff. I think you might be really looking at some challenging preseason matches to prepare.
Yeah, and I think it was a weird training camp because they all flew out to California and they basically spent 3 weeks there. I'm not sure if they're going to do that again. Right. I think they would have a pretty unique opportunity if they wanted to train locally this January. Go down to Paulson Stadium and play South Georgia Tormenta. Play a friendly with them. I think, you know, you'd get a little bit of emotion injected into what otherwise would be a pretty straightforward friendly. Mm-hmm. Play Chattanooga again. Play Nashville. Play Miami. I don't think you're going to have like a Challenge Cup situation at Kennesaw or anything like that. I don't think you have to go to that extent, but you could.
It's actually not a bad idea I don't think Charleston will be doing that with their stadium situation. So
And by the way, if you did not see, Charleston made a deal with Patriots Point College of Charleston. Yeah. They're going to use that facility now.
New ownership too.
And they're staying in USL Championship, I guess.
They are,
right?
That's what they said.
Anyhow, options abound for this preseason. Keep in mind, too, that we now know the 8 potential opponents for Atlanta United in the first stage of CONCACAF Champions League. I will point out that if the CBA is still in limbo at that point, MLS is not participating. That was reported by Doug.
I also don't think that happens.
I hope it doesn't.
That's a huge black eye worldwide.
I agree.
If you pull out of the Champions League.
I hope it doesn't, but just in duty, I have to report that.
True.
The one Liga MX team that is in the pot that is opposite Atlanta United is Lyon. The team that really stands out to you that's going to be in that pot is Saprissa.
Mm-hmm.
The prospect of going down to the Monsters Cave would be...
In round of 16?
Very frightening, but also kind of fun at the same time.
Not a round of 16, it's not. There's no fun about that.
Portmore United from Jamaica, couple teams from Costa Rica, including Saprissa.
San Carlos.
San Carlos is the other. Communications from Guatemala or Honduras.
Comunicaciones.
Yeah, that one.
We'll work on it.
Yeah, so a couple from Honduras, one from El Salvador, one from Guatemala.
Are Vikingos back? Is Independiente from Panama back?
No, they got knocked out in the last straw. Yeah, they are not back. All the MLS teams and three of the four Liga MX teams are in the pot one or Bumba one or whatever you want to call
Toronto's it. Toronto's angry about this, by the way.
Why?
Because
they know the rules.
Yeah, but they're angry. If they win MLS Cup, they don't go.
Well, they should have won their domestic championship. I mean, this
is
not new.
One of the media things that's come out this week.
That isn't new. No. I mean, they've been through
it. It's never happened before, though.
Well, because generally they've won their domestic cup and then... I mean, heck, if you want to be upset, Philadelphia would probably have a case for being upset. Like, wait a minute now. Hear me out. Okay, if Toronto is going to win MLS Cup and they don't get the Canadian spot, well, then Philadelphia, I think, was next in line behind Seattle, weren't they? So, I mean, is Jim Curtin going to get upset? No. These are the rules that were agreed to, right?
But it's the Champions League, and the champion's not going to be in the Champions
League. It is a little weird. That is a little weird. I will acknowledge that.
I'm intrigued to see where it goes. I don't think it happens. I think Seattle wins. But let's say
Toronto would still be entitled to a spot, would they not? If Seattle... No, I guess not, because Seattle didn't win their conference. Yeah. That's true.
It's going to be funny, and there's going to be some interesting things that happen with it. I wonder if there's a push for a neutral site playoff, not between Toronto and Seattle, but between Toronto and the lowest-placed team that got in out of CONCACAF League. That got in as the losing quarter finalist that was the highest ranked. And I think it's Comunicaciones. It could be No, it's not Portmore because they won the Caribbean.
Hold on. I think I have the answer.
It might be Comunicaciones.
Hold, please.
Toronto's going to challenge Comunicaciones. Yes.
Talk amongst yourselves.
We'll play in the Cayman Islands in a playoff for the CONCACAF Champions League spot.
Well, we could go into the random fixture generator.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Play it in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, or Singapore.
Well, it's got to be CONCACAF, at least.
Hey, CONCACAF likes flying charters and spending lots of money, so I mean, I wouldn't rule
out. They're not going to do like CONMEBOL and move something out of the Confederation.
Actually, the lucky loser was Saprissa.
Wow.
The lucky loser was Saprissa.
But they're higher ranked. There were two lucky losers.
Oh, might have been Olympia.
That might have been Olympia. That might be it.
Okay. So those were the two lucky losers.
So Toronto will lay down the gauntlet if they win. Greg Vanney will grab the mic after MLS Cup and lay down the challenge and demand them to put their spot on the line.
And then they'll go down to Havana and play
in a steel cage.
Playoff, and he'll wear a scarf and do whatever.
Vanney's been lucky. He said it's been a lucky scarf. Well,
You don't wear scarves indoors.
It's been lucky.
Unless it's one of these. Stoppage Time brought to you by Aaron's Easy, Beautiful, Affordable, Top Brands in Furniture, Electronics, and Appliances. Your credit is the best. That's fine. Shop Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores.
Shiva on Facebook says, do you think there's any notes that Frank DeBoer will take from this year's playoff run that he can apply next year?
I don't think he did anything wrong. Like, I've seen a lot of talk about, we didn't use all the subs.
you were controlling the match.
I don't know what they would have been.
Yeah.
I really don't. The Vialba for Parkhurst one, you go down 2-1, all bets are off, you go for it. But what else would it have been at that
Well,
stage?
And your bench,
you had Merrim.
You had Merrim. You did not have Vasquez.
You had Hyndman.
But at that point, it's...
Neither one is what you're looking for.
Right.
You're not going to change anybody defensively. You're not going to change anything in the midfield. I don't think there was anything that he got wrong. I really, truly don't. Because I don't know what you would have done differently. I mean, if you're just going to freshen it up, okay, fine. Nobody looked tired. You maybe could have brought in Remedy for Larenowitz because it's a little more going forward and just go for it. But Jeff was critical at that stage because he was playing kind of a hybrid role between the midfield and the back line with Parkhurst out. So there wasn't a whole lot of options there at that point. And you didn't need them because you were in control of the game. You outplayed Toronto. 100%. You didn't finish. Period. That's not on Frank.
Right.
You gave up two goals that were world-class goals in the postseason. Period. I don't know what else there is to really learn. You've got to finish in those moments. That's really what it comes back to for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we're going to play that game, and I understand the basis
of Sheevan's
question.
I totally get Sheevan's question, yeah.
And I'm not demeaning the question at all. I get absolutely where you're going with it. What Frank did in the first two games clearly worked. He got two clean sheet wins, okay? Survive in advance.
He made the change in the first one.
Right.
That worked really well. He pulled the lineup in the second one that worked really well.
But let's look at the things that were out of Frank's control. Greg Berhalter, for some reason, orders Miles Robinson to do hard conditioning after a match in which he did not play, and he's out for the entire postseason. It sounds like he would not have been able to play this week if Atlanta United had advanced. Well, that's not in Frank's control.
Nope.
You can't control Michael Parkhurst's shoulder falling out of its socket and losing him for a match. Fortunately, you got him back. You can't control the selection of Alan Kelly as a referee. And you can't control Alan Kelly's unwillingness to show Michael Bradley a second yellow, which absolutely could have and perhaps should have happened.
I think he got the yellow right initially, though. I don't think it's a red card on the
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was dog so. Yeah. And I think Howard Webb very clearly explained that to Doug Robertson, and I have no issue with that.
I agree with that.
But it was a yellow foul, and he did have a very harsh challenge later that should have been a second. Well, you can't control that.
Easily could have been.
You can't control the AR not raising his flag when Darlington Nagbe is careened into by Justin Morrow on the far touchline. They let it play on, and the goal by De Leon is scored from the spot on the pitch in which Nagbe would have been standing. Can't control that.
Yep.
A lot of things out of your control. It's like we talked about a week ago today. To win a championship, you need significant breaks. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta United got a significant break, a huge lifeline when LAFC was knocked out by Seattle. When New York City was knocked out. Not necessarily lucky, but significant breaks. Toronto got significant breaks last Wednesday. Nothing Frank could have done about that.
The only thing that I'll go back to that maybe you could have done differently in this game is you didn't have any attacking firepower off the bench. You opted not to have Vasquez in the 18. You could have maybe started with one of Pitti or Barco on the bench in case you needed that change.
And that
you went with the most attacking lineup you had.
Yeah, and I will admit, and this is a very nitpicky thing, and it didn't cost Atlanta United the game. I do think it was surprising that if Joseph got hurt in training on Monday and Frank was being honest when he said that he was prepared to take him out after 5 minutes if necessary, I am a little surprised that you would not have had Brandon Vasquez in your 18. I think Tito probably would have been but I am a little surprised that Brandon Vasquez wouldn't have been on your bench in that situation.
Yeah.
But that it didn't cost him the game at all. I mean,
defensive issues that hurt you without having Robinson and Parkhurst at different points in the postseason, your defense was good. You went with a very bold attacking lineup to start. You created a ton of chances. You had far more chances than Toronto. It didn't pay off. It should have.
Yeah, I think I tweeted last Thursday. I'll never forget Ian Dark during the 2011 Women's World Cup final between the USA and Japan, where the USA is just firing rockets and bombs at that Japanese keeper. And Ian Dark said, you know, sometimes you just wonder if the trophy already has Japan's name on it. It's not your night. Sometimes you can't explain it. You can do everything right, and it's just not your night. And it wasn't Atlanta United's night on Wednesday. It just wasn't.
There's games, you know, that I've gone through calling them or coaching them or being part of the club that was playing in them. And afterwards, you just look back and you're like, we did everything that we could have. There's really nothing we could have done differently. There were no more goals for us in the game. And you gave up that second one instead of it continuing on and seeing what might be gifted to you. You gave up the second one. I think it was a foul on Nagby. I don't think the play should have continued. It wasn't called. You couldn't find one to equalize. Had the chances to.
Let's see, John Hammond's on Facebook. Will MLS ever start protecting the more technical teams in the future? Judging by both conference finals, the matches were officiated in a way that benefited the physical defensive style.
I'm wondering if you could maybe expound on that a little bit.
Rather than the more technical flair teams in the league.
I think it's two different arguments, honestly. Because Marufo and Kelly call the game in a way that I actually like. They're consistent. Now, there's a difference between being consistent and having a high bar for involvement and blowing the whistle a lot and not protecting attacking players. I didn't think there was anything in the LAFC game about not protecting attacking players. And honestly, I didn't think there was in the Atlanta-Toronto game.
Yeah, I know some LAFC fans will probably argue about Vela and a couple shoulder-to-shoulder challenges.
Shoulder-to-shoulder. Sorry. That's what it is. Like, you go in strong? Yeah, 100%. And if the referee's going to allow you to go in strong one time, you go in strong again.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And don't have a problem with that. There's nothing in the Atlanta-Toronto game that was in that vein. The Nagby's play, I think, is just a foul.
Right.
It's just a foul that I think was a foul in any game with any referee, and it wasn't called. There wasn't anything about Pitti or Barco being roughed up or being consistently fouled or hit.
And Jair Marufo did not cost LAFC that game.
No. There could have, and I've said it since that happened, there was one handball, potentially, that I thought should have gone to an on-field review, because I don't think Marufo could have seen it well, because he's behind Diamande and Arriaga, and it looked like Arriaga's arm was out and moving towards the ball when Diamande tried to flick it back to himself. Mm-hmm. The other one, I don't think, was a handball according to the current laws of the game, where Kim Ki's arm was extended backwards.
Now, next year in MLS.
Well, next year, it's still not definitive, but it's more definitive.
Yeah.
It's not the same, like, attacking players like we saw yesterday in Champions League. Attacking players, accidental or not, if you touch it with your hand in the build-up play to a goal, it's called back. Defensive players, it's the whole thing about being in an unnatural position away from the silhouette. And you could argue that he's away from the silhouette, but is it unnatural? He's kind of stretching and his arms are flailing. It would have been a tough judgment.
Yeah.
I do in general, and not about the playoffs, but in general, I do want to see MLS protect attacking players more. I think far too often across the whole league season, there are too many teams that get away with physical play on attacking players, and it's not called. And more importantly, the persistent infringement is not used enough.
Yeah.
That's my biggest beef.
Questions, by the way, brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com. Keep them coming. Appreciate it.
Make us think. I like the creative ones. Yeah.
Andre on Facebook said, what should we do with Goslin, Vasquez, and Carlton? Also, I would like to see Jackson Conway get some first team minutes.
Okay, so we'll work backwards. Conway's on a USL deal, so he can't get first team minutes directly. He can in Open Cup. My guess is Conway is with the first team in preseason training. I think he gets that opportunity of a preseason training with the first team, maybe gets some games there.
In the same way that Kendall Edwards was with the first team last year.
Yeah. He's on a USL deal. He's on a USL deal for next year. You can always sign him to an MLS deal, but you're talking about a kid who was 17, played a lot in the USL Championship. I loved his game. I thought I remember seeing him in the first home academy match when he played for, I believe it was the U-17 team at that time. God, it could have been the U-16s. He looks like a completely different person now. Like, he's grown, he's strong. He can be a back-to-goal number nine, but he's also got quick feet. He can play. He's got MLS potential. I truly think he does. Mm-hmm. He's also 17. He's got one professional year under his belt. Maybe he gets an early Open Cup game next year, but I think he gets the preseason. Gosselin, I have no idea because of injuries. He had an unbelievable U-17 World Cup for the U.S., and we haven't seen him at that level since because of injuries. And I'd love it if you can get him healthy and you can see what you have. But that's a tough decision because he's, I'm assuming, and we don't know, in an option year, I would assume. He's not going to be out of contract.
We don't
know.
Let
that, but
we don't know.
That's one we don't know.
Same with Carlton.
With Carlton. We don't know. I don't think he's out of contract. I don't think either one's out of contract. Carlton, this year, he had a lot of ups and downs. But he also had a lot of really good moments. And especially late with Atlanta United 2, he played at a level that I have not seen him play at consistently as a professional yet.
Yeah, I think Carlton can be a great player.
I do too.
But it might not be in Atlanta. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't want to make that yet. Because
we don't know.
Yeah.
That's why I say might.
It's consistency. Yeah. And for him, like for Gosselin, it's staying healthy consistently. For Andrew, it's both. I mean, he has had injuries, and he had injuries at the very end of the USL Championship season that maybe he could have been that attacking option off the bench in the Eastern Conference Final. But he was out for weeks. He was injured. It's also consistency off the field, and we saw it with the passport situation. And I think he learned from that and bounced back on the field and was very, very good. I'd love to see him get the opportunity because he's got a skill set that you don't come across very often. And every time that we've interacted with him, I think he's great with the media. He gets it. He knows what his role is. I think he's passionate about wanting to be a star in Atlanta, in his hometown. He's got to deliver consistently on the field for that to happen.
Vasquez?
Vasquez, I think, had his best year in 2019 with Atlanta United. Honestly, at the beginning of the season, I didn't expect to be having that conversation.
I think Frank figured out the best way to use Brandon.
He's a nine.
And
he's not a winger.
Exactly.
And he had some rough moments with Atlanta United too early. And it was honestly the Open Cup that saved his year.
Open Cup hero.
U.S. Open Cup hero, Brandon Vasquez.
He always has.
He was.
Yeah.
He's the leading all-time scorer in club history in the Open Cup. And he carried you to the Open Cup this time. You don't win it without Brandon Vasquez.
Keep in mind, too, Brandon Vasquez. I know it was tough with Al Joseph in Toronto and Chicago. Against Red Bulls, but Brandon Vasquez really was key in some MLS matches for Atlanta. Even that embarrassing night in Chicago, he still scored a penalty in that match.
He had some really good moments. I think he had more good moments this year than he's had in his Atlanta United career. But you look at the long-term depth chart, and it's Jackson Conway factors into that.
Yeah.
You're being pushed now by a teenager a few years younger than you that you have to beat out. And that's not a guarantee. And you've got to continually get better. He's another one that we don't know his contract situation. I don't think he's out of contract, but you're going to have to make a decision on him long term. And does he need to go play somewhere, whether it's on loan or is it just it's not there right now for him and he might want to go play elsewhere.
Right.
He's at that age where you have to make that decision.
We have time for a couple more questions. And I do want to reiterate, by the way, stoppage time does not stop, even though the season is over. We'll keep going every week.
I heard five stripes don't stop.
Yes.
That's what I heard.
Yes.
Stoppage time doesn't stop.
The stoppage time don't stop either.
That's what I heard.
So if we don't get to your question today, fear not. We're going to be back next Wednesday.
Travis Dodge, you'll like this question. I know it's a few months away, but if you could choose, where would you prefer Atlanta United have to play during CONCACAF Champions League, both for the beautiful scenery as well as the history of that club?
Well, are we asking what would be the easiest matchup to advance? Or
I think you could take it however you want.
Yeah.
Man, I'd love to do it. I know this sounds crazy. I would love to do a game at the Monsters Cave. I'd love to go to Saprissa.
I don't want that round of 16 at all.
Well, and that's the thing. Like that,
during
that's,
champion. That, so the run.
Later? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, the run.
I'll take my chances in the semis there.
They would have to play in the semis.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably. Now, you could be. If they win theirs, if you win
yours. Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But they're going to have to pull an upset, and then it could happen.
Portmore, because there's no language barrier, it's Jamaica, it's probably going to be one of your. I don't want to say easier draws, but it's going to be a lot more straightforward than playing a Sapriza or someone like that.
Leon's difficult. Leon would be an amazing place to call a game from.
Yeah.
Leon's the most difficult of that pot. Sapriza's next. I don't want anything difficult in round of 16 when it could be your first game of the year. It might be your second. I will take, if I get to choose, I'll take Portmore, or I will take San Carlos out of Costa Rica, because Costa Rica is nice.
People are great down there. I'd love to go back there again.
And their forward, Alvaro Saborillo, is I think 38, 39 years old, and he's like basically carried them to this point.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much left he can carry. I'll take my chances there.
Let's see. Angel on Facebook says, hey, guys, thank you for all your hard work. He said, my question is, do you think we should go out and buy a future keeper? Guzan played well, but has been getting older. And can we also buy a left back?
You're not going to buy a left back. No. You have George Bello. Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, and on the keeper, I don't want to make it sound like keepers grow on trees. I'm not suggesting that at all. But going out and buying a future keeper, I don't think is really necessary right now.
I mean, a future one, no.
If you had an inkling that Brad was not going to be able to finish out this coming year, then that's something you would want to invest in. But, I mean, who cares who has the best backup goalkeeper in MLS? No one unless your starting goalkeeper gets hurt or struggles.
It's bigger than that, but I think you're covered. I mean, now you're going to have to make a decision because, according to reports, Alec Cann's out of contract.
But I think Brandon Moore is under contract for another year.
Still questions there. And I think Dylan Castanero with Atlanta United 2 has MLS potential. Mm-hmm. But he's in a weird situation where Dallas had drafted him. So there's a weird thing between USL rights and MLS rights, and who knows how that gets worked out. But further down the list, Justin Garces at UCLA is a national team-level goalkeeper in the future. 19, I think this was his sophomore year. You can sign him to a homegrown deal when you want, and there's no rush. He can play 4 years at UCLA, sign him as a pro at 22. He could play 18 years as a professional. So you've got him. Also have Vicente Reyes, who has been playing for Chile's youth national teams. He's in your academy. So future, by the time I think this conversation happens, because I think Brad's got 3-4 more years. I really do. But let's say it happens earlier. You've got short-term options already in your orbit, and you have two great long-term options that you can sign to homegrown deals. So I think you're in a good spot. And left back, Bello's your number one next year if he's healthy. I don't think there's any question. You're not going to change that.
All right, time for one more question.
All right, the only one we have left.
Good, found we got to them all.
Jason Stein, quick question. Can we be 2020 MLS Cup champions?
Yes,
absolutely. I mean, you don't know exactly what the team's going to look like right now today.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the infrastructure in place and the willingness to go out and do what it takes.
That's
the
goal.
And don't also forget the fact that this front office has gone out and made really savvy midseason moves in each year of the club's existence, but especially so bringing in Hyman and Miram this year, difference makers. Mm-hmm. Bringing in Rometty last year when Nagby got hurt turns out to be a brilliant move. So even if, let's say, things you don't hit every item on your wish list in this offseason, this front office has still shown the ability to go out and morph into what this team needs to be come the midpoint of the season when that window opens up.
The other side to that is every offseason they've made a big, bold move.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's
and true. That can happen as well.
Yeah, it was Nagby in 2017 going into 18.
Ooh, there's another one, too.
Oh, you, that's not who you were talking about?
No.
Oh, I mean, well, Barco. Barco.
Yeah, those are the two that I was talking about.
Yeah, that Barco guy. Yeah.
You know, Barquito, our boy who was in Disney this past week.
I saw that.
This is off.
I also think, and we talked about this upstairs off the air, you saw glimpses at the end of this year of what I think Pitti can be for this club next year.
100% agree.
And you look at the way that Barco kind of trended up at the end of last year when he finally got healthy and got some continuity and some matches together. Same thing with Pitti. So I think the sky's the limit.
I have to go on SiriusXM now and talk about Trae Young, so we're going to cut this a little
That's
bit
a
short
fun
today.
Thing to talk about.
Yeah, man, he's been great. Boy, Techers Tuesday last night, by the way.
That was awesome.
I don't know if you saw it. I tagged Jason in Atlanta United. Trey's been special, so that's been a lot of fun. We'll be back next Tuesday, 2 o'clock, for another edition of Stoppage Time. We'll be at the end of the trade window, so and we'll have the MLS Cup Final in our rear
view. There'll be a lot. Prediction, MLS Cup Final.
Seattle in penalties.
Ooh. Jimmy?
Seattle in regular time, 2-1.
Seattle 4-1 in regulation time. I think they blew
out of the water. Well, that'd be just such a shame.
Rui Diaz with two, Ladero with a world-class goal, and they find something.
Rui Diaz. Yes.
Rui Diaz.
Rui Diaz is the most underrated player in this league. And for those who still haven't really paid attention or given him his due, I agree. I think this could be his big coming out. You know, it's not going to be.
How old is he?
Mid-20s, I think.
Man, he's.
Yeah,
Europe, you know, like,
that was a great get.
He scored, I think, the best goal in any Atlanta United match this year when he saw Pereira Miles back in July went against
and
us.
He was a killer in the postseason in LA.
Yeah, he was
unbelievable.
He was okay. So we've been we'll be back next Wednesday, 2 o'clock. Thank you very much for your questions. Appreciate it. Stoppage Time brought to you by Aaron's. Easy, beautiful, affordable, top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best. That's fine. Shop Aarons.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. For Jason and Jimmy, I'm Mike. See you next week here on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.